In just a few short weeks, Anthology Together is bringing you the best of ed tech at the Walt Disney World Swan and Dolphin Resort in Orlando, Florida. Join the global education community to hear about what's next in the future of learning, get a firsthand look at the latest innovations, and discover new insights to help both your institution and students achieve their goals. The future of learning is here, and there's no better place to see it than at Anthology Together 2022. The event kicks off on July 11th, so register today at www.anthology.com/together. Unmuddle helps your community college to drive enrollments and revenue. Community colleges help with workforce development programs to compete on a national and global scale, offering those services to employers. It's time for a new era in higher education. Check out Unmuddle at unmuddle.com/colleges and claim your college for free. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio here with you again. I say that every single time and I keep coming back. We're like 440 something episodes now. We are booked out, I think, with guests until October or November of this year, almost every single day. So I for people that wonder, how do I do this? Well, I do it every day at lunch, every single day at lunch without fail. Actually, sometimes I do reschedule, have a kid pop in on these recordings every now and then, actually have some work every now and then. But anyway, we get it done. Why I keep coming back and doing this, for besides the fact that I love higher ed and I love the guests that I get to speak with, I get to put people together and make really fun things happen. I've got a first-time guest and a first-time guest co-host. And whenever we can do that, it makes for a great conversation. Let me bring in my guest co-host. Here he comes, ladies and gentlemen. He's going to get the drum roll. His name is Rob Bulow, and he is head of product at Vector Solutions Education. Rob, what is happening?
Not much, Joe. I believe I might have been guest 70, early days of pandemic. It is a pleasure to be back in a new capacity today. I can't wait for this conversation.
Yeah, that was pre-sound effects, I think, when we had you, Rob.
Things have come a long way.
Yeah, we've come a long way where it was far more boring to listen to this podcast, I feel like. But not because of you, guest number 70, but because of us. We're a little bit better these days than we were before. But Rob, you brought great insights to the table. Before I bring in our guest, I do want to ask you, what's exciting at Vector Solutions? What's going on with you and what's happening?
Well, I mean, our mission is making colleges, universities, workforces, public sector organizations safer, smarter, and better. So couldn't have a bigger or bolder mission at this point in time. Lots of really exciting stuff happen at Vector Solutions in the education sector, because lots of exciting stuff is happening in education. And we play in a space where safety, well-being, and inclusion are integral to the success of K-12 schools and higher ed institutions. And so creating pipeline to employment, helping institutions differentiate themselves by the products that they're selling to students that are making socially conscious consumer decisions. That is such a cool place. I wake up every day feeling like I'm changing the world, and that is a really good place to be professionally.
Oh, love it. See, you get the yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, you have a conference coming up, don't you?
Indeed. Yeah. Next week, we're going to be virtual, our annual Campus Prevention Network Summit. It's the 14th year. We've got a guy named Joe Sallustio, who's going to be one of the keynotes at that event.
Yeah, you had to go out and scrape the bottom of the barrel for speakers, apparently. I appreciate you, Rob. And I think it's going to be a great event, great agenda. I'd encourage everybody to register. It's going to be fun. And, you know, as we talk about what's happening in higher ed and new innovative things happening all the time, but I don't know if there's anything newer than what's going on and that our guest is going to talk about. And here she comes, and she gets this. Ladies and gentlemen, her name is Dr. Randy Cosentino, and she's president of the U.S. Naval Community College. Boy, that's a mouthful. President of U.S. Naval Community College. I think I got it right. Randy, what's happening?
Thank you for having me, first and foremost. It has been an exciting and wild ride over the last 2 years as we've been striving to build a brand new college within and do something entrepreneurial and intrapreneurial within a larger established organization with a really strong mission. So it has been
entrepreneurial and higher ed in the same sentence, Randy. How dare you? You know, tell me about this. How does this happen, right? The U.S. Naval Community College, it's this idea. You're the inaugural president. How do you think about taking this responsibility on? Because I feel like it's almost even bigger than a regular, I'm going to say regular, a community college that's for the masses. And now this responsibility of, you know, our men and women in service to the country, it's like this got this extra piece of responsibility. How do you go through that decision-making process? Why did you take on this role and how's it going?
Yeah, thank you. First and foremost, for me, I am incredibly sincere in saying that there was probably no greater honor or privilege I could have than stepping into this role. For me, this is a culmination of a life of work so far about trying to provide access and success to higher education, to students in higher education, particularly working adult students. But to get the opportunity to do that in the armed services, in the military, and serving our sailors, our Marines, our Coast Guardsmen and women is beyond a privilege. Among other things, my husband himself is a former Marine and we have other family members as well. So it's of personal interest and connection to me, but also the opportunity not just to provide access to these service members to education that's going to improve operational readiness and warfighting advantage within the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard, but will also change and shape lives and communities. Because we all know when someone gets access to education, it's not just about improving the opportunity to improve your day-to-day in your job performance, but it also sets a path and a benchmark for others in their families and communities to recognize that education is achievable. I think we're able to create a lot of positive momentum, both as we say, inside the fence line and outside of it. So for me, it was an easy decision to get the opportunity to join the USNCC as the inaugural president. I get the opportunity to build something that's hopefully going to be really impactful for our nation and for those service members and students we get to serve.
Amazing.
I'll tell you, I think about everything you said and I have so many questions, so many that'd be impossible to get them all out. But when you start something new, there are so many amazing things you get to do. And it's sometimes hard. It's sometimes hard to get, I don't know, resources, people on board, set the path of learning, curriculum, and so on. What have been some of your short-term big wins that you go, you know what, I can't believe we've done this. And what are the things that you need to improve upon as you, you know, get through growing pains, right? Because this is a fascinating part for so many college leaders is this, how do you grow and get through growing pains, even if you have an established university or college?
Yeah, no, thank you. Whether it's a nonprofit, a for-profit in the private industry, or something within the government or military sector, anytime you're creating something new, there are unique opportunities, advantages, and challenges. It is never easy to craft something entirely new. I want to start with the fact that in my 2 years of experience, I have been incredibly impressed and pleased by the level of support there is for the mission. And I think that is really important, particularly when you're trying to build something within a large existing organization that has clear goals and outcomes every day. Protecting our country is no joke. For them to see the value and importance of education, particularly for our enlisted service members, it all has to start there. Because without that, really, there's no place else to go. And so we've been very lucky to have that from day one. In fact, the genesis of the idea of the U.S. Naval Community College came out of a study commissioned by the Navy about how and whether they were using education to its ultimate goal and where they could do more. And that recommendation was we really need a community college for our enlisted service members to help them gain those skills. So in the 2 years that I've been here, and really it started with myself, our chief of staff, and another of our senior service liaison,
the Tiger Team.
We started from nothing, from an idea. The wonderful group that gave us the recommendation, gave us some ideas around it, and from there, and with the support of a lot of folks across the organization, we put in place a strategic plan. And since then, in the past 2 years, we have completed our initial pilot, which was about 550 students taking courses in naval relevant fields. Our goal was to learn more about the challenges, the opportunities, the obstacles, the needs, the program design. So then we're moving forward and building this, we could head in the right direction. We have been able to move into our second phase, which is now building our first 7 associate degree programs. They have embedded certificates. We can talk more about that later in naval relevant fields, all delivered online, predominantly asynchronously for our globally deployed enlisted service members. We are about, we have launched about 3 of those 7 programs. We're in the process of launching the others. And we're on our way over the next year to enroll 3,500 approximately enlisted service members. And this is all on the path to keep growing significantly larger to serve a larger population. So we've accomplished that. We were very, very pleased to be written into law. So when you are a military and government institution, we don't get approved by the state in which we operate, we need to be approved by Congress. And so in December of this past year, the law as a part of the NDAA was passed that formally established the UNSNCC, allowed us to be degree granting. And we have started and kicked off our accreditation process by submitting our first accreditation paperwork to the Middle States Commission on Higher Education. And at present we have, probably about 1,300 some odd students enrolled on our path. So all of that has been accomplished. We've been able to start growing a core team and putting in place all the other things that you know we need as an institution, whether it be assessment and technology, learning ecosystem, you name it. Oh yeah, Rob, please.
Well, I'm going to let Rob come in a second, but I'm going to shout out Dr. Heather Perfetti at Middle States, who's both been a guest and co-host of this podcast. And, you know, you wonder, you got to let the U.S. Naval Community College through the accreditation process as quickly and easily as possible. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Got to help these men and service women. Rob, over to you.
Appreciate you plugging from the pulpit, Joe. And also, Dr. Cosentino, I have so many questions for you specifically on the skills and competency-based education. You are uniquely positioned to be able to speak to that work with your background as the Chief Academic Officer at Guild Education. I'm going to save those for just a moment, though, and go back to that Genesis story and appreciate you starting at the beginning, as all good stories do. How is your mission at the Naval Community College and your model different from the existing service academies?
Thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. We are we're fairly unique amongst the service academies. I think the best analog I can give you is the Community College of the Air Force. And they've been doing this some time with great success. And we've learned a lot from them and we appreciate their support. In some ways, our model is similar. In some ways, our model is different. We are both going after serving our enlisted service members, obviously airmen on their case and sailors, Marines and Coast Guardsmen in ours. But we're taking a slightly different approach. So the primary goal of what we're trying to do is sort of 3 legs of the stool, as I mentioned, and I get paid by the number of times I can shout them out. So operational readiness, warfighting advantage, and then connecting our service members to lifelong learning. Those I see as the 3 fundamental legs of our stool, and that's what we are trying to build towards. What's unique about our model, and there are a number of things, is that first and foremost, we're tri-service. And that's unusual, but we see that there's value to bring all of our naval services together and allow those students to learn from one another. Secondarily, we are designed to operate in consortium. So we at the USNCC are not trying to do it all ourselves. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We want, or our motto is that we want to deliver the components of the program that we feel we're best suited to deliver. And for us, that starts with a Naval Studies Core, a Naval Studies Core certificate, where we're developing in conjunction with our fellow sister institutions and our Naval University system and our faculty, a 5-course Naval Studies certificate that takes some of what had been some of your traditional gen eds, like your history and your philosophy and your poli sci, but navalizes them and makes them more relevant to that learner. So we have naval ethics and leadership, modern naval history, civ-mil organizations and policies, geopolitics and the such.
Is that being shaped by the institutions that you're working with in collaboration with you, or is that something that you're bringing to the table as a unique sort of set of gen ed requirements that are naval specific?
Yeah, so these are ones that are really being generated from the USNCC. The way it works in consortium is that we are identifying and working with a target group of partner institutions that are exceptional in the program area and that concentration area that we're serving. So our goal is ultimately to have about 15 concentrations, technical and non-technical, run the gamut from your cybersecurity, your data analytics, aviation maintenance to things more like military studies and organizational leadership, which are a little bit more general. We're seeking partner college and partner institutions that help us deliver that concentration, which will be embedded within our program as a certificate, as well as some of the additional gen ed that may be less navalized, your English, your math, your science, that are in there. And they're delivering those components of it. We deliver the Naval Studies Certificate, but then we form consortium with those partners such that there's an understanding about the joint program degree we're offering and that they're going to accept the credits for that we're offering, we're going to accept the credits that they're offering, and so forth. I should point out that in the short term, based on our consortium model and prior to our achieving accreditation, that partner institution will be the primary degree grantor. We'll offer that Naval Studies Certificate, but through consortium, that partner institution is the degree grantor. As we achieve accreditation, we'll flip the script a little bit. We're still going to work in consortium, but who becomes the primary degree grantor changes, because once we have that accreditation, it allows us to be able to control our program outcomes, be able to ensure we're maximizing credit for training, because we know military training is a critical component of what our service members bring to the table, and that we can help ensure that we're also building a strong four-year transfer pathway network. I can keep going, but let me stop there for a minute.
By the way, navalizing, I don't know if the U.S. Navy has trademarked that or if that's your deal, Randy, but I don't know if you can trademark that.
I think I may have come up with that one, but it works. I think
that sounds great. I'm like, oh, wow, navalizing. That's pretty cool. In so much that you're saying, when you talk about curriculum development, you talk about your consortium and the degree grantor credit transfer for adult students in particular and for adult military students. I feel like prior learning assessment is really important here. I would say in the expert category of PLA, why that's important to an adult working learner. How does that play in? Because, you know, when you try to explain PLA to somebody, it's the most confusing thing, prior learning assessment. What do you count? What don't you count? Sure, we could count these credits from this other accredited institution, but what about these credit stacking third-party providers and what happens there and how do they count? And is, you know, when somebody asks about it, I say the easiest way to understand PLA is like a medic in the military who shouldn't have to take medical assisting again. You should be able to give them some credits toward that field work that would be harder than anybody who's in a medical office would do, right? The field work for the military, much harder, much more complicated. Anyway, I'm ranting and I'm raving here, but tell me about PLA and how that plays into your plans.
Absolutely. It is critically important. In my experience, there are few organizations that are as thoughtful and clear about what they're trying to teach their service members at various stages of their ratings, of their MOSs, and throughout their leadership development than the military. The military has always been at the leading edge of documenting those KSAs, those competencies, and understanding what their service members need at each stage of the game. And as such, in a sense, it makes it a little easier because you have a good roadmap as to those skills and abilities, knowledge, skills and abilities that those service members should be achieving at each stage of the game. Now, that being said, despite that being really well documented and having clear trajectories of career growth for each of those ratings or MOSs, when I say ratings or MOSs, I mean that specialty that service member is in, there's still that work to translate that into college credit. There's still that gap out in academia, as you point out, between being able to understand and respect on one hand what those service members are learning and doing on a day-to-day basis and being able to translate that to college credit. And it can be time and cost intensive. So already, the Navy and Marine Corps, among others, do work with American Council on Education, with ACE, to make sure that a great deal of their training is actually externally reviewed so that there are recommendations for college credit. And that forms the basis, and that'll be a large chunk of what we're able to do is capitalize on that already pre-existing recommendations to make sure that we can grant credit for it and that we're choosing partner institutions that recognize the value of that prior training and credit as well. But that's hopefully where it starts and not where it ends. Again, as we move on that path to accreditation and we get to make some of those decisions on credit granting, our goal is to be able to expand what we're doing to be able to evaluate an even larger swath of the training that takes place. It's still going to be difficult. It doesn't mean that every single training and our course over here on some topic that isn't connected to really a field of study or something in the program is always going to get college credit. It needs to be appropriate college credit and, you know, applicable college credit, but it's a core part of what we do. And I'll just say one other quick thing, and I'll turn it back to you. It's not just the giving credit for the prior training that's so important to our model and what we're doing. It's also making sure that as we build out these two-year pathways for our service members, we're also building out a network of four-year transfer pathways. So our students should have seamless, well, we're just an associate's degree grantor. We stop at the embedded certificates and the associate's degrees. We want our students to be able to transfer to four-year schools with no loss of credit once they've completed.
Level up.
Yep. Let me ask a follow-up about PLA. Do you think, well, I'll say that. Let me make a statement and you tell me if you think I'm right or wrong. That'd be easier. I find that prior learning assessment is so subjective. I feel like depending on who you get, you know, who's looking at it can say, oh yeah, this fits. And so much of it is the institution wanting to take credits or take this training or not. And then there's a financial implication, right? The more credits you take, the less classes the student needs to take, and therefore the less money you collect. And it becomes this, I don't know, funny space of, you know, desire. Do we desire to grant this credit? We could probably make it fit if we want to, but, you know, should we? What do you think about that? Am I crazy?
No, not at all. You're spot on. And a lot
you're
of
the first person that's ever said I'm not crazy, by the way.
A lot of it has to do with also who is the one responsible for doing that. So in some cases, the faculty are doing it. In some cases, it's more of a central decision-making. And it has to do a lot with the mission of the organization. I will say there are those institutions out there that still adopt a mentality that if it's not taught here, it's not good enough. That might be the case, even if it's a college-level course. But I'll be very clear, those are not the institutions that we're out there seeking to work with. So in forming those consortiums and looking for partners that we're looking for those that do understand the importance and the power of transfer credit. Rob, you mentioned earlier, you know, Guild Education, my former role at Guild as CAO, you know, transfer credit was critical to what we were doing with those students that were coming from Walmart, Disney, Discover. And I can tell you from that experience and from prior experience in my other roles that any institution that is thinking of a calculation that says, hey, we're going to lose money by giving credit for this, has it backwards. At the end of the day, those students who are more likely to receive credit for prior training are those students that are more likely to persist and be successful and complete the degrees. And we know at the end of the day, these colleges value completions and graduations more than anything. So you're going to have a student that's going to persist longer, ultimately, in my opinion, take more classes, and you're going to be able to attract that incredibly important working adult student that frankly can demonstrate they know how to do these things. So I think
you're spot on. 100%.
You're not crazy. We've got our finger on a really hot topic as well here around skills. And you know, you talked about the US Navy being really demonstrable of the types of competencies needed for success in its servicemen and women. And you know, your work at Guild around creating career-ready graduates, it's such a hot topic in higher education right now, where there has never been more questions about the value and relevance of a college degree, when the primary product that a student is buying is a pathway to a good job. That's why they continue to come to college in the face of lots of additional options now. And so I'm really curious how you are mapping the inside the classroom education to the types of skills and competencies that are going to result in a direct pipeline to jobs. And the second part of that is, how are you closing the loop with the employer side? And I recognize that particularly with the Navy, that is a very clear pathway from the U.S. Naval Community College to a service job in the Navy. And perhaps it is a departure from service to go back to education, and then you go back to service. So I'm curious also in a more expansive view of how we think about credentials and certificates and even non-cognitive, non-technical skills, and how we really create an economy around those that prepares today's learners to be successful in tomorrow's workplaces, but also prepares today's workplaces to be able to identify the skills and certificates that are going to add value to their employees and differentiate them in the workplace. So there's a lot in there that I wanted to dig in on. I don't think that there could be a better person than you, both in the proximal role as president of the U.S. Naval Community College, but also in your education or your work at Guild Education.
Thanks.
If you remember every part of that question, Randy, you're the best memory in the world. Now,
I can't. There are 25 subparts in that question. So you'll come back, Rob, and tell me what I don't hit on when I answer. But I caught a lot of things in there. So let me start first and foremost with the credential question and the question of and I know it comes up a lot, and I've heard it on this podcast, you know, that value of the degree versus the value of shorter form credentials and what folks are deciding as far as that goes. And the answer is not either or in my mind. It's yes and. At the end of the day, I think there's wild value to shorter form credentials and certifications, particularly when there's industry normed expectations. And I think there's value to shorter form programs as well as the connection to lifelong learning. And to be honest, we at the USNCC are trying to accomplish all of that at once, which is a little bit of a major undertaking. I will let you know how successful we are. But at the end of the day, each of our associate degree programs have embedded within them two certificates. So our service members who have varying op tempo, you know, they're going on deployment, they're going off and defending our country. You know, it may not always be easy to make linear progress, and it may take some time to get to the full associate's degree. So we want them to earn a Naval Studies certificate, that first core set of courses I was talking about, and we're giving them the opportunity to earn a concentration certificate. So whatever that professional concentration is, cyber, military studies, nuclear engineering, they can earn a certificate in that as well. Thus, if you're unable to complete the whole program in the timeframe that you have allotted, you're at least are walking out with some sort of marketable credential. And I don't just mean walking out, serving within the services. We hope that you're going to get better and stronger with every class you take. But once you've completed that nuclear engineering certificate, hopefully you're bringing some real marketable skills into your nuclear engineering job and role. And so we're embedding that. In addition, where there are industry norm certifications, we're doing our best to align to those as well. I mean, cyber is the best example. And with some of our programs, and we have a number of partner institutions we're working with one of them, Western Governors University, WGU. We're launching our cyber with them, and it's our first foray into competency-based education, into CBE, which we think will be really attractive to our service members, along with a more traditional asynchronous model. But within that cyber WGU program, you have students that will earn 5 or 6 different industry recognized certifications in cyber while they're working through it. So again, not either or, but yes and. And that's probably part one of your question. I'll try to hit another part, and then you hit me on anything else that I might have missed. You know, when you think about that adding value and the connecting to those competencies, I think we're in a unique position as being a part of the Department of the Navy to be able to make sure our alignment to what we're building is preparing those students for greater career set success within the Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard, within the fence line, as we like to say, as well as beyond. And that's because from the outset, because we're entrepreneurial, because we're growing within a larger institution, we can think about best practices on 21st century skills like critical thinking, analytical reasoning, you know, quantitative analysis, you name it, writing, ethics and leadership. We're building all that in there, but we also have the opportunity to work hand in hand with our services through what we're calling our CRAGs, our curriculum review advisory groups, to make sure that those KSAs are aligned so that we feel confident that when a service member is leaving our associate's degree in X, that they've met those competencies that are going to help them be prepared for high value career fields within the services. Interestingly, those are often some of the same ones that are valuable outside. But at the end of the day, it's important we develop those skills within there.
Unmuddle's mission is to provide learners, particularly working learners, with multiple pathways to learning and development, with clear signaling as to the time, cost, and uncertainty of each. Unmuddle is powered by community colleges, particularly innovative community colleges, to provide a skills-to-job marketplace. Come join the nation's top community college network today. To get started, go to unmuddle.com/colleges. That's unmudl.com/colleges.
Right. And you got 23 of the 25. So
fire. Nice.
And I, the last piece that you were talking about, I think, is a particularly interesting one around non-technical skills. I think it's a lot easier to quantify, measure, report on technical skills. But when you talk about things like creative analysis, critical thinking, ethical decision-making, how can we, because I feel like outside of the context of U.S. Naval Community College, particularly when you think about a four-year residential experience of higher education, so much learning is taking place outside the classroom that has real world 21st century skill value to employers, to community, to social impact on society. And I'm curious how you measure the attainment of those non-technical, non-cognitive skills, but then really importantly, how do you connect them to an employer so that they see that you've achieved a skill that matters beyond the technical skill of what you're doing in your role.
Yeah.
And let me just add to that real fast, Randy, because what we're talking about, Rob, we don't say it's the soft skills and nobody calls them that anymore. I'd really be curious to know what the Naval Community College is calling those non-cognitive, non-technical skills that are so valuable to employers right now.
Now I've heard human skills, success skills. Yes, what is your take?
Go to a U.S. Naval serviceman or woman and say you have soft skills. And I feel like they'd be like, what are you talking about?
We call them 21st century skills, but whatever you call them, we all know they're important, but you're absolutely right. They're the hardest thing to measure. They're the hardest thing. It's not that you can't demonstrate the learning's happening. You know, with a good assessment program, with solid rubrics and the ability to really measure whether students are demonstrating those skills, you can measure it. But then how does that translate into your performance day to day in your job or your role, whatever that may be? It's a heck of a lot harder to demonstrate. I think it's one of those things that we all know, you know, in our hearts and in our souls are adding value. What I'll say, it helps be working in an environment that understands the importance of those skills. And at the end of the day, our philosophy relates to a lot of changes that are happening society-wise and industry-wise, as well as within the fence line. And that has to do with small group leadership. The idea that decision-making needs to get down to smaller and smaller units. So decisions can't just be made up on high. They're ambiguous situations that our folks in the field are facing day in and day out. And we need to empower those folks to be able to make those decisions closest to the problem. In addition, we also need to make sure in this world of increasing amounts of data and information, which is hugely important within our in our naval services, that again, those that are making important calls are able to incorporate that data, are able to cut out the noise and the chaff and focus on what's important to dig in to make good decisions. And we have to teach them some of the skills to do that. And then it comes to critical thinking as well. You know, situations are becoming far more ambiguous than they ever were. It requires on the ground quick thinking. And so we have a naval services that understand the importance of those 21st century skills. And I didn't even get into communication and writing and mathematical skills and those basics. Let's take those for granted. They understand the importance of it and therefore understand that they're ready to make the investment in that to make it happen. How on the flip side do you demonstrate that improved performance? I'll be honest with you. That's something that we're still working on as well. We're still trying to figure out how do we demonstrate the impact of it. We believe that it's there. We're measuring whether or not those skills are attained, but we really need to keep working closely with our commands and with other groups to see, are there demonstrable ways to quantify that and to show that improved performance and that improved decision-making, whether it's ethical leadership or whether it's incorporating a lot of data. And you have me back after we've had another year or two under my belt. I promise I'll come in with a...
Oh, you have an open invite. But we'll see if you want to come back after this next segment on this podcast. If you've listened, you know what's going to happen. If you haven't listened lately, maybe you don't know what's going to happen. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have another episode of Higher Ed Word Association. This is where I give my contestants, Rob and Randy, a word related to higher education, and you get to open up and tell me anything that's on your mind. I'm going to start with what we call a meatball, an easy one. And Rob, we're going to start with you, because if you mess up, our guest gets time to prepare, and it's all about the guest. Here we go. Again, don't give me a one-word answer back, because that makes for a very short Higher Ed Word Association. So we're going to go first. Again, this is related to higher education. Social and or service impact. Tell me what's on your mind.
Today's young people are making values-based consumer decisions, from the jeans and cell phone they buy to the job they take or the college or university they choose to go to. And you know, you see it in the activism moments of hashtag Me Too and Black Lives Matter. And young people are making these... They are socially conscious. They are activism oriented. They want to make the world a better place, and they're holding the brands that they consume accountable to those things. And they want, I think, to build the skills to make a difference on society. And so for me, the challenge for higher education is how we integrate those skills inside and outside the classroom, how we measure and quantify the attainment of the experiential skills that students get. But I think that that key point that you were talking about, Randy, around how we close the loop on the employer side and create an economy that says these skills aren't just nice to have and good for society, but they're great for productivity. They're great for workplace culture. They're great for retention of your employees. They're great for the leadership trajectory of your workforce. That's the closed loop that I think it's the golden egg that we're all searching for. I think you're going to have a lot of eyes on you after this podcast to see how y'all are solving it.
Okay, Randy, you're up. Service impact.
Thanks, Rob. That was a great answer, by the way. And I will yes and as far as that goes. So I agree with everything he says. I will also take a slightly different tack. So when I think about social and service impact, the first thing that came to my mind is the power and the impact that access to education itself provides. And at the end of the day, I know most of your listeners are familiar with this, but the more we can help our young people and our working adults access education, not are we only improving the quality of their lives and the growth of our economy, because we have all sorts of jobs and roles that need to be filled, but educational attainment is connected with all sorts of other positive outcomes, whether it's health and longevity and satisfaction with one life and career. So just in general, in terms of keying off the social impact that you talked about to begin with, the ability to make higher education accessible for our working adults and for those who historically have been underrepresented and underserved in those populations, I think has the power to have tremendous impact. Add to that, as I said earlier, that cascading ripple effect that for each person you get access to education, it not only changes their lives, but impacts those of the of their family and community around them. It can have just a multiplier effect.
Are you guys sure you haven't done this before? All right, here we go. We're going to go to the next one. Randy, this time you go first, and your word is innovation.
Yeah, I mean, higher education has been a hotbed of innovation for, really the past couple of decades. Innovation is an interesting word because I think innovation does not always mean you hit a home run and you have a wild success. Innovation means trying new things, trying to figure out new ways to deliver on services more effectively, more efficiently, more broadly, expanding access, expanding outcomes, et cetera. But it doesn't always mean you get it right. And at the end of the day, there have been some tremendous innovations that have helped us think about new ways of doing things, but they might not have always worked out exactly the way we wanted. Plenty of folks have talked about how we all anticipated that MOOCs would change the world. And they have, but maybe not in the way that was initially anticipated. They've gotten us smarter on how we think about learning, how we think about measuring learning, how we assess results. And they've led to a really neat sort of model on, you know, all sorts of educational credentials that might be provided through some of our providers out there like Coursera or edX or Udacity, Udemy, you name it. So innovation doesn't always come out the way you want, but it's critical in our industry to keep figuring out how we serve and support students better. I, for one, think technology has been a huge advantage. I know we all just lived through COVID, and some feel that it was a step backwards where folks had to go from a purely offline environment to an online environment. But online and technology, and I've spent my whole career in ed tech and using technology to provide access to education, has just provided such greater room for innovation and room to expand who we're serving and how we're serving them. And so I'm excited to see it continue.
Okay. That's a tough act to follow, Rob. Innovation.
Oh man, but it's such a great one to piggyback on. Because I feel like so many people in the context of COVID have said, you know, we need to just get through this and just get back to the way things were. But the way things were was a decade of declining enrollment, rising costs, questions of value and relevance, increased competition, changing demographics. It was not the higher education that could be or should be in the future. And so I think that innovation is looking in the opposite direction, not going back to a higher education of the past, but really reimagining and recreating what we could be. And I feel like, as someone who works as a leader in a technology organization, I completely agree that technology is a critical lever. And I think that we got a lot of change through with COVID in normalizing a more tech-heavy part of the delivery of academic training. And we learned students didn't love it. We didn't get it right with the way that we were providing online education inside the classroom. And so we started to see standards developed and increased bars of accountability for how to deliver really quality asynchronous education or complete online programs. And so my question, my interest around innovation is how do we also raise the bar around the quality of the student experience online, particularly when you're thinking about community colleges and non-residential institutions, which are some of the best pathways to access and equity in higher education. But how do we not lose the richness that happens in the outside the classroom experience of a residential four-year college degree? And how does that plug into a technology environment? How do you foster those skills, those connections with people online? I think that's the nut that we have to crack to really, really change the game in higher education.
Okay, last one, and we're all dealing with this. And as you guys may or may not know, at Lindenwood University, I'm standing up Lindenwood Global, which will be our formal entrance into the global market with online programs that we're developing for all the things that you guys said. And I'm dealing with something and Randy's dealing with it from scratch. And Rob, you're dealing with it because you are bringing technology and awareness of social impact and into colleges. And that's change management, Randy.
Yeah, look, change management is a part of literally everything you do, from the smallest to the biggest part and components of any program. And I was recently having a conversation about with a group, in fact, just yesterday, that had talked about a new system that they had rolled out within their institution and how they believe they picked the right system and they believed that that it was going to meet their needs, but it wasn't yet hitting the mark. This happened to be a new system for the registrar's office. And we tried to dig under that a little bit and understand what was going on. And at the end of the day, it came down to those two big words, change management. They're like, yep, we think we've configured the system okay. We think we chose the right system and it meets the mark. But how do we then go through that really deliberate and really thoughtful process of making sure to provide the training, the guidance, collect the input, do the tweaking, do the change management that you need to do to really make that, let me tie it back to your last word, maybe I get bonus points, the innovation that you've rolled out. So innovation without change management gets you nowhere, because we're all just running as fast as we can to keep up with the day-to-day that we need to do. When you want to make a change and you want it to be impactful, you got to stop. You got to slow down. You got to make sure there's a plan in place to see that change or that innovation through, so folks can understand why, and then use that change and deploy that change to the best of their ability. And then to borrow from accreditation, and then you need to assess how that went, and you need to keep closing the loop.
I think you have to listen, right? Because there's a lot of inertia in the status quo, and change is one of the only constants in life, but there's so much resistance that comes from it, especially real big ideas, change from the foundational level, which is, I think, the kind of change that we're talking about here. And we think about this a lot at Vector as it relates to, you know, issues of sexual assault on college campuses, issues of harassment and discrimination have existed since the beginning of higher education and long before. They are just perennial challenges that are endemic to this institution. And we've not made a ton of progress on these issues. And it's because they often tend to be under-resourced, underfunded, under-prioritized, because they're seen as marginal to the business of higher education, which is recruiting students, filling seats, and conferring degrees, and hopefully preparing people to be successful in jobs. And so where does sexual assault prevention, where does inclusivity fit in? Well, it fits in when you think about the fact that young people are making decisions about going to college or not based on these issues. They are more academically successful if they are well. They're going to persist when they feel taken care of, when they have their basic needs met at their institutions. And so, you know, change management, if we on the student affairs side of higher education want to get leaders more bought in to resourcing our work better, we can't just talk about outcomes around knowledge, attitudes, and behaviors around mental health. We have to then connect the dot and say, oh, and that's going to allow us to bring in more students, differentiate ourselves competitively, prepare students to just knock it out of the park in the classroom, get them graduating at higher degrees, get them ready for 21st century jobs. So really listening and having empathy to the collective values that we all share, that's how you get change through when everybody's bought in on it.
If well, I had guys, sound effects, I'd give them a way to go right now, but I don't have access to your magical path.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a way to go. I could do this. Let's see. God, you put me on the spot, Randy.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to have to go to the judges because we do have to declare a winner. I've asked the judges, did Rob Bulow win this episode of Higher Ed Word Association?
False.
Sorry, Rob. The win goes to Randy. I will say that it is an absolute impossibility for any guest co-host to win. It always goes to the guest, but that's the way we do it here at the EdUp Experience. I hope you guys had fun. All right, Randy, we like to ask the same two questions of our guests to end every episode. I will tell you, knowing Rob well and myself, we could probably do this with you for another hour and not even get anywhere that we want to go, because there's so much and you're so well-versed, the two of you guys together too. I would just sit back and put my microphone down and listen. But alas, we need to close it. And Randy, what did we miss? What did we not say about the U.S. Naval Community College? Anything going on, any new things coming up, anything you're proud of, anything else is your chance to plug whatever you'd like about the community college. And then what do you see as the future of higher education?
Sure. So first on the community college, you know, I'll return to where I started, which is for me, this is an incredible honor and privilege. I am so excited to be able to help our enlisted service members, our sailors, our Marines, our Coast Guards, men and women, get access to this education and get them across the finish line. We're still a very new entity, and it's going to take us a few years before we get up to our full scale. But that being said, we're still getting the word out across what is a very large organization of the Department of the Navy and the Coast Guard. And so we are just eager to continue to reinforce that you're an active duty enlisted service member in one of these services. There are a lot of great advantages for considering going after your education, particularly since this is a situation where the Department of the Navy and Coast Guard are able to fund that component of your education. It gives you that first great step to get access to then go ahead and use your tuition assistance and others to get your bachelor's, get your master's. This is about connecting not only to improving things in the fence line and improving operational readiness and warfighting advantage. I've gotten it three times. That means I've gotten my quota. But also to connect that service member to lifelong learning and benefits that are going to help them within the time they're in the fence line and beyond. So just really excited today to get to talk about it, and really appreciate your having me on. Do you want me to hit question number two first? Or?
Future of higher education. This is the part where we quote you, put you all over social media and say, Randy has the answer. No, we don't do that.
Well, go ahead. I do not. Let me start off by that. But I will say when I started in working in higher education, it was, you know, not at the very beginning of online education, but the beginning of online education and technology enabled education becoming a real enabler. And I've been in it long enough to have gone from it being the true new model and the non-traditional learner being the working adult learner, I mean, a non-traditional learner to people talking about, when I talk about asynchronous courses, calling that, oh, that's traditional online. And our non-traditional learner has become the common traditional learner, the working adult, the distance learning, the flipped classroom, the shorter form programs, the technology enabled support. All of that has become commonplace. And so what I will say is the amount of change that I've seen in the last 20, 25 years I've been doing this is tremendous. It's just exciting to see ongoing change. I mean, Rob, if I may, the work you're doing is tremendous because there has been a long trend towards trying to improve access and success to underserved populations. We're actually trying to do that with the USNCC as well, to make sure that the students we're enrolling reflect the diversity, both of the services and our nation, but it's also supporting them in getting there. So I would personally love to see continued work in that regards. I think we'll continue to see technology and large data and predictive analytics and all sorts of new models emerge in terms of how we deliver that education. And I think more and more institutions, such as your own, are going to be asking themselves, how do I do online? How do I serve that what used to be non-traditional population? Because they have become the core population. We know high school populations are shrinking. So how you serve working adults in a career relevant, outcomes oriented, socially accepting solution is, I think, all part of the nature of the game. On that, I'll turn it back to you.
Wow. I don't even know what to say other than I think maybe you guys should do an episode and I should be the guest. You guys are better on the microphone than I am. I will say that it has been an absolute pleasure to have my guest co-host on with me, of course. You know him now. Rob Ulone, he's head of product at Vector Solutions Education. Rob, thank you for now. You've checked off a box. You've been the guest. You've been the guest co-host. You're just, you know, running the cycle.
I mean, it's on my resume already. So
you're making me laugh. And of course, our esteemed guest today doing really important, incredible work. She gets another applause. Dr. Randy Cosentino. She's president of the U.S. Naval Community College. Randy, how was your EdUp experience today?
Oh, fantastic. I'm a convert.
Oh, all right. Well, we will look forward to having you back. Once you get through that accreditation process and you're granting those degrees, we'd really love to hear how that process goes and what amount of work your team, because you have to be surrounded by an incredible team to get through that amount of work. Accreditation is not easy. Yeah, it's not easy to get through. And we appreciate you, Randy, coming on. And I encourage everybody to follow Randy, follow Rob. And ladies and gentlemen, you've just ed-upped. Unmuddle helps your community college to drive enrollments and revenue. Community colleges help with workforce development programs to compete on a national and global scale, offering those services to employers. It's time for a new era in higher education. Check out Unmuddle at unmuddle.com/colleges and claim your college for free. Anthology is leading the next wave of edtech innovation and unlocking student success on an entirely new scale. Ready to take a closer look at what's next in the future of learning? Join fellow faculty and higher ed experts for Anthology Together, one of the world's largest education events, taking place next month at the Walt Disney World Swan and Dolphin Resort in Orlando, Florida. Anthology Together features some of the most innovative professionals from the global education community sharing insights and best practices for institutional and learner success, both inside and outside of the classroom. Register today and attend tailored sessions on topics like creating more dynamic courses for your learners and strategic decision-making across recruitment, admissions, and enrollment. The time is now. Visit www.anthology.com/together and reserve your spot before the event kicks off on July 11th.